the plaintiff's attorney in making out his civil case, an assault case, for example, where there's a criminal prosecution going on?
Well, usually, it's been my experience, if the criminal case is over with by the time the civil case comes along.
But if there's an enterprising plaintiff's lawyer there...
We don't have that kind of Lane County.
You don't. Okay.
Just remove Lane County from the bill.
All the enterprising ones are off running for the Senate.
Okay.
Now, you wanted to mention something else. I'm sorry if I took you off.
Well, that's fine. It gave me a pause that it was appreciated. I'll try to temper my remarks a little bit more now. I know I was excited before. You know, the Attorney General said, well, we have to go through all this rigmarole just to get documents, as if just getting documents was something that was a rather mundane thing. Well, think about what we have, this precious thing we have, the right to be let alone. Bill Douglas talked about it in real simple terms, and I'm simpler than he is. The President of the United States says the rhetoric of let's get the government off the back of the people. Well, I just want to look at all your documents in your home. It's just a document. I just want you to empty your purse or some documents in there I want to look at. I just want to snoop around through your financial record. All I want to do is look in your diary. Well, and my heart aches when I see that type of an approach. The Oregonian not long ago talked about the U-2 spy planes that are flying over Oregon and looking at marijuana plants. Well, I remember when I was in junior high school when Eisenhower came on and denied it that we were using them against the Russians. Well, now we're using them against Americans. And nobody said it. Nobody could say, no problem about that. The enemy's changed in the 20 years that passed.
And because most of us can look out our window and see it growing right next door. It's not exciting, the thought of flying over and looking at it.
And those U-2 planes can see innocent as well as guilty behavior. But with getting back to this issue of this investigatory subpoena, there are prosecutors that have done this without the benefit of federal statutory or rule authority from the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. Let me just give you a quick smattering of some cases where there's been less done and less pernicious invasions by federal prosecutors. Durbin versus United States, 221 Federal 2nd 520. Neither the Constitution statutes nor the deep-rooted traditions of our law recognize the United States Attorney's Office as a proper substitute for the grand jury room. The attempt was, quote, clearly an improper process for the United States Attorney to issue a subpoena returnable to his office, close quote. United States versus Hedge, 462 Fed 2nd, 221. Government is not authorized to subpoena witnesses to its offices for interviews as, quote, a subpoena is only returnable at the place of the trial, close quote.
Are you saying this current federal law doesn't allow the U.S. Attorney to subpoena witnesses to their office?
That's correct.
That's currently.
That's current law, according to my old law professor, Charles Allen Wright, Federal Practice and Procedure, Criminal Section 273, pages 546, 547.
What law school was that?
Say it again.
What law school was it?
Texas.
Nice.
He represented President Nixon. I was one of the few cases they lost. I'll draw my comments to a close the best I can. But what this bill is, as I view it, is a brand of investigation of the search warrant type without the necessity of those protections that long ago our forefathers and foremothers fought for, died for. We were warned by the creators of this country, and we were warned by George Orwell and Aldous Huxley in 1984 and Brave New World, respectively. I would suggest that as you consider what interests will be invaded if this bill passes, that you consider something that Justice Masmano of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania said, quote, of all the jewels in the crown of human life, none shine so bright as the right to be let alone, close quote. I would submit that we need to polish and not tarnish that jewel. And I will close with what may seem as a revolutionary comment. It may be that it is the obnoxious thing in its mildest and least repulsive form, but illegitimate and unconstitutional practices get their first footing in that way, namely by silent approaches and slight deviations from legal modes of procedure. Those aren't my words. They're the words of Mr. Justice Bradley in Boyd versus United States in 1886. I wish we could roll the clocks back of our country around 100 years so we could once again appreciate our heritage. Please do not pass this bill. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for the committee? Stevie Remington, ACLU.
Stevie Remington, ACLU of Oregon. The ACLU opposes House Bill 2262 and urges you to table it. We think that the ability is currently in the Attorney General's hand through the use of grand juries by DAs. The testimony in the House, at least before the House Judiciary, was that they had no difficulty getting cooperation from the DAs and no difficulty getting the subpoenas they needed from the grand jury. We don't think that we should adopt this and circumvent the grand jury system, nor use this as a substitute for a search warrant. I realize that if one is very sophisticated and has good advice of legal counsel, that there may be times under which a subpoena might be quashed, although I think the vague standard adopted by the House would make it difficult. But what I'm concerned about is the number of people who just get the subpoena and are uninformed as to their rights, who do not seek legal counsel, and who simply follow the subpoena. They think they have to. And I think we get into problems of self-incrimination and Fourth Amendment questions, even though there might be some possibility of protecting against that. I think many people will in fact not exercise those rights, and we think we ought to stick with the current practice. I do endorse the, if you do go for the affidavit, we would much prefer the language that the Public Defender's Office submitted to the one that in the House amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hamby.
Help me, Stevie, to understand. If the same arguments were presented on the House side, and I assume you testified there, why did that
happen? I did not.
But I heard you in your testimony, you said the same arguments were presented. Why did the House committee pass the bill?
I didn't understand it, because I really felt when they testified to the fact that they had no difficulty, I thought, you've made my case for me. But immediately afterwards, they had a work session and started talking about the need for it. And I remember Jim Hill, saying that he was very reluctant to give the AG more power than the DA. And then I was not present for the final work session when they adopted their amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
I have one more, Mr. Chairman. Your comments about the grand jury. Could you speak to that and the reasonableness in an organized crime situation that would run multiple county? And working with multiple counties. If you were Attorney General for the state, Stevie.
I don't have any factual situations about how any of the investigations they have done. But remember, in the organized crime, that includes practically the whole criminal code. When you get into some of the things of conspiracy, that it is organized crime.
Two or more people committing two or more crimes.
Mr. Chairman?
I just want to be sure Janet's Senator Hamby's.
Yes.
I just think that it is possible. I wouldn't have objection to a provision for convening a grand jury. I think there were some practical problems for how you select it for the statewide and get them together and so on. But I just don't think there is a convincing need that we have to have this authority in that office.
Senator Frye.
Well, to help Senator Hamby, you know, the whole blamed investigation can be conducted in the same county courthouse. It might involve an investigation and witnesses in every one of the 36 counties, but the whole thing can be done in one spot, one county. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, I certainly hope this committee never just takes for granted the relevance and the fairness and the need for legislation that comes out of the House Judiciary Committee just because it came out of there first.
I didn't hear the last, just before you said just because it came out of there first? What?
Yeah. Well, you know, Senator Hamby probably couldn't understand why this bill passed the House. It was heard in the House Judiciary Committee, and I'm merely pointing out that we do have a separate function, and I think it's to kind of examine these things over here.
Oh,
if
I
make
have
a mistake, then I think it's up to us to correct it.
I may have brought that up by asking John Hinkson if he'd appeared over there. And it's not anything wrong to not appear in the first house.
No, but no, Mr. Chairman. The senator asked the witness, How come
it passed the house?
How come it passed in the house?
Well, the House committee, Senator, house is what I meant.
Thank you. Those are all the witnesses signed up for House Bill 2262, so we'll close the public hearing on that. And I would accept a motion, or if the committee would rather reflect on this, I'd serve your pleasure. I wouldn't want to have a long work session on it because we do have a lot of witnesses here waiting on other bills, but someone would like to test the water with a motion, that would be fine, or we can go on to the next bill.
Chairman, I'll move it. I think the limitation in line 5 to any criminal investigation, the appearance before a judge, the affidavit, and the statutory test is, I think, meets my needs, and I think it meets constitutional needs.
Senator Brown moves House Bill 2262 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Again, those 4 points in the... you'll notice, however, that the first time in 5 months that our council made a mistake, there's a whole sentence that's left out of the mocked-up bill before you, and you might want to take a look at that. That's on...
I hope we've all looked at it by now.
Yeah, it appears in the amendments on lines 3 and 4. Subpoena shall be issued when it appears to the judge upon the affidavit of the Attorney General that the administration of justice requires it be issued.
What would you take it to mean, Senator Brown, that the administration of justice required it to be issued? What would that standard be?
I would interpret that as to mean equivalent to probable cause.
You see words there that in your experience in statutory construction would appear to be somewhat similar to the concept of probable cause?
Yes, but the only well, obvious what question words, what is, words is why didn't they use it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the difficult, why didn't they use it?
Further discussion. Please call the roll.
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Cohen?
No.
Frye?
No.
Hamby?
Aye.
Dixon?
No.
Wires?
No. Motion fail.
You want to move motion to table?
I'm just accepting motions at the moment. I'm not suggesting them.
I don't know. I'm just wondering whether you think we ought to clear the agenda. I think that, you know, that there are four votes not for moving it out, and it's your pleasure.
Well, frankly, I'm glad we had a good hearing on this with four witnesses, because I hadn't understood the difference between this power and the typical subpoena power pursuant to a district attorney investigation. Nor did I know the U.S. attorney couldn't do this. I usually think of U.S. attorneys as having more powers than state attorneys, state district attorneys. So I felt a lot more comfortable with this bill before the hearing than I do now.
Mr. Chairman, maybe the Attorney General could suggest or come back with some more limiting language on the standards that would give us something more traditional, if that language is not the traditional language. Obviously, it's not verbatim. I just assumed, maybe rather carelessly, that it was the traditional intent.
Of course, Mr. Chair, I think what would be traditional would be a grand jury.
Chairman, the department, I want it to be clear, has no objection to that proposal, and the Oregon District Attorneys Association endorsed that proposal. We simply did not urge it because we felt this was a less intrusive and more protective mechanism for people who may be the subjects of investigation. If it's the desire and the understanding of the committee that a grand jury is more appropriate for the protection of defendants' rights and those who are being investigated, we would accept that alternative.
Well, are there any further motions at this time?
I would hope the Attorney General could come forward with amendments that, such as he's just stated.
I'm going to be interested in your explaining to me later in your professorial role how, in the interest, the public interest requires disclosure. No. That the administration of justice requires it be issued, how that rises to a probable cause standard.
Maybe because I think that's...
That would be nice?
No.
If it did say that? House Bill 2420, Representative Annette Farmer.
Mr. Chairman, could we have Mr. Jerry Cooper
together with him?
He's from the Traffic Safety Department.
While you're getting ready, could we just take care of something quickly here?
That's fine. Okay.
Okay. House Bill 2363.
Cool.
There are some amendments. Okay. There's some amendments here. They're fifth page in my book. Both in work session of House Bill 2363. It says revised 62883. Legislative Council 62783, and you'll see on line 8 and 9 it says if the judgment or decree is against a public body as defined in ORS 30.260. And that exempts public bodies from the provisions of House Bill 2363, the prejudgment interest bill. And the other amendments are conforming amendments. Counsel, do you have any further comment about these 62783?
I'd move them.
Senator Hendrickson, let's see now, that bill is sent out on the floor,
it's
sent
committee.
Back to committee. Okay, Senator Hendrickson moves the adoption of the 62783 HB 2363-6 amendment. Discussion. Did you hear Senator Hemby? This is to remove public bodies. Okay. Does anyone have any questions? Okay. Discussion.
No,
there's another one.
Okay.
Is there any objection to removing public bodies from House Bill 2363? If not, that's so ordered. Counsel. Okay, counsel is pointing out for our further understanding that this is only if the judgment is or decree is against the public body that the prejudgment interest would not apply. If the public body, in the few cases where they bring actions where there's a decree of, or a judgment for money, they would still be able to get prejudgment interest. Now, there's another amendment here that the council has distributed. Looks like everyone has a copy. On page 1 of the House amendments to House Bill 2363, after line 15, insert C, in making its determination pursuant to subsection B of this section, the court may reduce such portion of interest as it finds appropriate if it shall find that the party asserting the claim has, without just and sufficient cause, delayed the trial of the matter.
Could you explain, just for the record?
This chair would move this amendment, and the sense of this amendment is that the court may reduce the portion of interest that would otherwise be due if it finds it to be appropriate, if it finds that the party asserting the claim has caused, without good cause, without just and sufficient cause, has delayed the trial in any manner, trial of the matter. That would be if they find that, for example, that a plaintiff's attorney has asked for a set over for a dilatory purpose. If a doctor witness has unexpectedly taken a vacation or been tied up in a surgery all day and they can't have their witness there, if the plaintiff asked for a set over, that wouldn't cause the court to say you can't have prejudgment interest. But if it was the third set over and the junior associate came in, as I saw one do recently in Multnomah County, and said that the attorney who was going to try this medical malpractice case is vacationing in Europe and he doesn't want to cut his vacation short to come back for the trial. If the court decided to grant the set-over in that case, they could say that's not a just and sufficient cause to delay the trial, therefore you're not going to get prejudgment interest from this date until the appropriate date that the court felt that it should recommence. So this is an additional amendment to add a potential, I don't want to use the word penalty, but a set-off against a prevailing party, the party asserting the claim, excuse me, if they are delaying the case. Well, this is all supposed to be to speed up cases, cause attorneys to quickly finish cases. If it turns out that the party asserting the claim is slowing things up, they certainly should not be given the benefit of prejudgment interest. So further discussion of that proposed amendment. If not, is there objection? If not, it's adopted. Now, Senator Frye moves House Bill 2363 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. I think it's pretty clear that the intent of these amendments is to allay the concerns of public bodies that we all heard so much about in the last few days, weeks, in the hopes that their agreement to oppose the bill does not extend beyond their own concerns. Senator Frye, do you wish to comment?
No.
Is there further discussion? If not, please call the roll.
Andrew Brown?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Frye?
Aye.
Hamby?
No.
Henderson?
Aye.
Squires?
Aye. Motion carried. I think I'm exempt because of, I'm a member of a pretty large class in this, but I did declare a potential conflict of interest when the bill was on the floor before, so I'll do it again now. Representative Farmer, thank you for waiting so long.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Annette Farmer, state representative from East Multnomah County in Portland. I'm here today to testify in favor of House Bill 2420. And I probably should be testifying in favor of all the drunk driving bills, because I am really in favor of most all of them. However, particularly about this bill, was drafted last summer. It is not exactly the same bill, but it was intended to. However, we found out that some of the provisions that were in the bill were already entered into some of the Senate bills, so the bill is now greatly reduced. I would like to say a few words first about drunk driving. All of you were given not only the testimony, but...
I wish you wouldn't tell us about drunk driving. We've had...
Yes,
you know it all.
Yeah.
Okay.
We really have had many hearings on it.
All right.
We have a beautiful handout.
What is your goal?
I was going to tell you about statistics, but I was going to say something here that I'd like everybody to know.
No, please don't
not
say.
Not statistics.
No, not about drunk driving, please.
That's about the bill.
That is about the bill. What is in it besides .08?
Okay, I'll tell you about the bill.
For 5-year license.
Well, there are three parts to the bill. First of all, the bill lowers the permissible amount of alcohol in the blood from 0.10% to 0.08%. In doing this, we are going to join Utah and Idaho. They have that. Now, Minnesota has even less, 0.07%.
Idaho and who?
Utah.
Idaho and Utah.
And, of course, this is going to be also a proposed... in the legislatures of several other states. Because
which one had 0.07?
Minnesota.
You have some a list by the states?
Yes. For example, California, Colorado, Tennessee, Michigan, Maryland, Washington, and Maine have already tough driving laws, you know, legislation. But those two states have 0.08, Minnesota has 0.07.
I just read a whole list of states the other day, and I didn't think that I saw anything except Idaho and Utah under 0.10.
Oh, yes, Utah and Idaho.
That's true?
Excuse me, Senator Frye, Jerry Cooper. I believe these other states have 0.08 presumptive. You're presumed to be under the influence unless overcome. They're not a per se standard.
Not per se.
But I mean, I never heard of Minnesota with 0.07.
No, I think it's presumptive. I believe that the state of Utah is the only state in the nation with a 0.08 per se law.
I think that's right.
Because of this double standard. And of course, you may not be interested, but all over the world, in all the industrialized countries, it's 0.05, and in some of them it's 0.01. Even a sip of alcohol is considered driving under the influence. Anyway, this now, driving at a 0.08 will result in the arrest of more impaired drivers with BAC between 0.10 and 0.12% as police arrest borderline cases. The greatest effect, of course, will be to deter social drinkers from drinking and driving. The probability of accident increases sharply, of course, when a person has 0.08. What it means is for a 160-pound person to have one more drink than the four already they have consumed in 1 hour.
Okay, and what's the other provision in the bill?
The next provision is stiffening of the...